You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Introducing ADT Self-Setup, featuring everything from motion sensors to Google Nest cams. It can be easily installed at your convenience and adapts as your needs change. You can add more products at any time, and your system easily moves wherever life takes you. Plus, when every second counts, you can trust ADT's 24/7 professional monitoring. When the most trusted name in home security adds the intelligence of Google, you've got a home with no worries. Go to ADT.com today or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP.
It's Monday, which means XQC has managed to get banned again, and that it's time for the latest edition of the E-League Report, the best damn esports show you'll listen to this week. I'm Brian, he's Seven, and we're coming at you live from the abandoned set of the H1Z1 Pro League.
brutal intro. Like, wait, did XQC get banned for something? Did I miss
it? Yeah, he's at it again. We're not even going to talk about it this week because it's old news, but...
Okay, it's old news. It's basically, it's a permanent fixture in our show notes.
Yep. Did XQC do something stupid this week? Yes.
Oh, well. He's entertaining, though. Come on.
He is definitely entertaining. Coming up on this week's show, SKT are already looking at replacements for Faker. Wes approves that there might be some teeth to their conflict of interest rules. Blizzard quadruples down on mobile. And Hi-Rez is all about that crossplay. But first, a big name in the FGC finds himself in the worst kind of trouble. Former EVO champion Infiltration has voluntarily withdrawn from the 2018 and 2019 seasons of the Capcom Pro Tour and was released by his organization Pandal Global. During an investigation by PG, it was discovered that Lee had been involved in an altercation with a woman back in November of last year that resulted in a temporary restraining order and conviction on domestic violence charges. Are you satisfied with Capcom and Pandal Global's response to this incident?
I think so. I'm actually really surprised that Pandal Global was actually the initiator on this, I believe.
Yes, they were.
Yeah, and that's... it's one of the things that I think we talked about it recently. Well, just about every team kind of lackluster. Well, they'll get punished the maximum fine.
Oh, this is like with the Dota stuff last week with like Complexity, right. Like you know,
yeah, and
we're
then
upset.
They're actively going after it. You know, after they learned there was allegations of what this domestic violence going on in Korea or South Korea, and I think it's important that they did do that. I think the punishment fits the crime, so to speak. Now, saying he voluntarily left out of 2018-2019 isn't really exactly what it came down to. I mean, Capcom was going to ban him either way. This is just a little bit more of a way to save
face. This is like when you're about to get fired, but you decide to resign instead.
Right. So essentially, they were going to boot him anyways. And I think that was smart. I think that was smart on their part to show that, like, hey, this just isn't acceptable in any country in any way, both by team, both by league. I'm actually surprised that it was this heavy-handed, but
it was pretty heavy-handed. And another thing worth pointing out here is there were far more rumors and allegations that were leveled at Infiltration that led to this investigation. And I think it's very important that we talk very briefly about what he actually did, because I don't want people to be like, oh, you know, he was, you know, all these horrible things I heard about him turned out to be true. So there was a singular incident that happened back in November that was basically with another woman over a cell phone. He had grabbed her wrist, and it had been proven that he basically had caused physical harm to her as part of this altercation. That's what led to the initial restraining order and what he was ultimately convicted on, and ended up being a $630 fine. By the way, and I know we talk about this every time we talk about the Korean court system, but the efficiency in South Korean courts compared to the U.S. is mind-blowing. This all happened over the course of like 3 weeks from like initial pressing of charges to actual conviction.
Yeah, that's a pretty quick turnaround.
It is. But it turned out the other things that were being said about him, there's a lot more deep domestic violence issues right. that were brought to light allegedly. And Capcom made a point to say that none of those others turned out to be true. But as the light of this particular one that they did find evidence on, they also apologized for the length of time it took for them to complete the investigation. Because, you know, I'm sure some people are listening to this and been like, wow, it's been a year since these things actually took place. Why did it take so long? And they blame things about the ability for them to get paperwork from the Korean court system. And I imagine it's very hard to investigate things in a foreign country and get, you know, legal information about what happened in those particular cases.
Yeah, well, kudos to Panda Global and to Capcom for their diligence in this. I mean, we've seen people, we've seen groups give up quite easily and, yeah. and just, or like, well, we don't know, we'll look into it and just kind of sweep it under the rug.
And hope people forget about it.
Right, exactly, exactly. Oh, speaking of things you may want to forget, if you're still upset about Diablo on mobile, well, you better strap on your diapers because Blizzard is not done with the mobile iterations of its games just yet. Blizzard executive producer Adam, man, I thought this was a typo for some reason. Alan Adam has confirmed the publisher has mobile games currently in production for all of its franchises as a response to declining desktop numbers. Now, for instance, for this one, I remember hearing this. I think this maybe even come up BlizzCon. Like, well, we have other things that are mobile related and yep. work. Didn't say it was for every single game. Is it just basically now time for us to get used to mobile games as a primary gaming platform for Blizzard?
I think you have to. What is so strange to me is there's so many games that all of us gamers play every day that happen on mobile. Hearthstone is the example people always throw out there, but there's been things like Clash Royale, Vainglory, etc. Mobile has already been a primary gaming platform for other companies for a very long time. We talked a lot about this with Tencent, right? And this is why they're right. putting potentially pressure on Activision Blizzard, as well as the known pressure they've put on Riot for not having a mobile franchise. So for Blizzard to get into the mobile market is just reality. People tend to get very elitist about their gaming, especially when it comes to Blizzard titles. And like, oh, you can't do Blizzard games justice on mobile. And it was easy for them to level that at Diablo because they're like, oh, it's a reskin version of a NetEase game. Like, oh, this is so horrible. The reality here is they have to get the next generation of gamers on board, be on mobile. What is strange to me is that there's all these parents out there that have their kids playing games on mobile today that are also the same parents that are upset that these are not just going to be PC-only titles. Like, kids are growing up on mobile. It is very likely that they are going to be mobile-first gamers in their adulthood, and I would rather see Blizzard be there where the next generation are going to be than just for no real reason stick to just PC only to appease the current fandom.
I'd also like to see more things on Switch. Can we talk about that? Can we just move more things on
Switch? Mobile concludes Switch. Like, whatever the mobile platform of the day is, phone is what obviously people look towards.
Right, I'm just kidding.
But I do think that Switch is like that good middle ground. And I would love to see almost every Blizzard title, where possible, where it makes sense, be on the Switch. Obviously, it's harder with like RTSs and things of that nature. But overall, I'm stoked to hear this. It won't be that every game will be for me, but not every Blizzard PC game is for me. So I'm perfectly fine with them.
And the thing is, these are about games that are already in flight, right? So this is, you kind of look at it as like an addition to the current gaming thing. So, for instance, they were talking about Diablo. Is this the mobile piece is more about filler between the storylines between essentially what happened between like 2 and 3, I believe.
Yep.
And so it's they're going back and telling more story. It's a complement to the PC games themselves. I don't think people realize that sometimes.
No, well, they have this false equivalency where they believe that Blizzard can only do X number of things at a time, and so if they're doing all these mobile games, they must not be doing any PC games, which is already been proven not to be the case. Like, we still see content coming out for new games. They've already confirmed there's new PC games in the works, including a PC title in the Diablo franchise. So people are just getting upset because they like to be upset about things.
And I mean, if they would have released like a movie that told the story between everything else, people would be like, oh, that's awesome. Instead, they released a game because they're a games company. it just doesn't make any sense.
And torches.
Right.
At this past weekend's Kuala Lumpur Major, Virtus Pro made a comeback from the lower bracket to take revenge on Team Secret and bring home the first major of the year. Evil Geniuses, who lost in the lower bracket final to VP, secures yet another top four finish after finishing third at the International. No real surprises here. Is it nice to finally see some consistency in Dota 2 coming out of the International?
I think so. Historically, we've always seen this kind of roster apocalypse, and then teams kind of have a hard time readjusting or settling back in.
I don't
know
who's who. Half the teams, like Wings, you know, the infamous example of Wings Gaming just imploding afterwards, right, despite winning the international.
It feels like we don't really get Dota 2 back in full force until you start getting into like January, February. But now, right out of the gates, we're getting something, and it's solid gameplay. We've seen Evil Geniuses again, not quite the Cinderella. Cinderella run. Oh man,
the
words. This is what happens when we record like during the middle of the day and not in the evening.
You're not properly lubricated with alcohol.
Yep, I probably should start drinking. Yes, but no, I think this is good. It's good consistency for the scene for the players because they're getting to stick with their teams longer, whatever it may be. I like it. I'm disappointed though, however, that you did call Virtus Pro as being the winner in this one, and they come out on top. But
hey, you know, sometimes people should stop listening to your Dota 2 predictions and listen to mine.
Oh, there you go. All right. So Epic has tapped Star-Lord himself, Chris Pratt, to be the face of Fortnite in South Korea. The Guardians of the Galaxy actor is being featured in promos, playing in bangs throughout the country. So is this the best celebrity gaming endorsement since, I don't know, Kate Upton deciding to peddle microtransaction stuff on mobile games?
Of course. Like, I'd like to see Chris Pratt in a bikini for no good reason, like we saw Kate Upton in all those ads for, like, I don't even remember the mobile game she was
riding a horse into battle.
Yeah, riding a horse to battle in a bikini. Like, it made zero sense. I mean,
can we see Chris Pratt riding Kate Upton on a horse? Just like, just whoa, on top. Whoa, there you go, man.
Sure, where you're going with that one. I don't know. I mean, good job, Fortnite. I guess this is what you have to do to sell games in South Korea. I always feel weird when the celebrity endorsements get involved in games, whether this is for console titles that get like a celebrity in the commercial, or you've had what has been the more recent trend, which is going and finding very attractive like C and D list female celebrities to peddle your mobile game. So this is, I guess, a step up from that. But overall, clearly they think Chris Pratt is big in South Korea.
Maybe he is. I don't know. Maybe Drake was busy or doesn't really speak to that audience.
Well, you know, he had a falling out with Ninja now, so he wants nothing to do with Fortnite.
Was he stream sniping Ninja? Is that what it was?
That's exactly what it was. And then he did an emote, and everybody knew it was him.
There was even more. I don't think it's in the show, but there was even more drama around that this weekend.
Oh, Ninja, yeah, something about being upset about with somebody with a high ping and then reported that guy. Ninja's clearly, like, needs a break. I think the guy's getting a little burnt
out. There was something around Epic. Again, I'm probably botching the story, but it's worth going out and taking a look at. But Epic went through, banned someone, and then someone else went through and took their name and then did some bannable offenses. And then it was someone had claimed that, like, I don't know, somewhere along the line, Ninja got involved and they basically started stream sniping Ninja under the same name.
Ninja's involved in everything.
And they thought that, like, the person hadn't been, and then they get unbanned. The other person gets banned. It's just weird. It's this weird mix up of, like, banning accounts, not banning accounts, people thinking that they were banned, or someone taking someone else's account. It was really weird stuff. It's a lot of drama for just really no good reason.
Well, you know, we love our dramas. Changes are abound for the Call of Duty World League. Following Tuesday's update to Black Ops 4, Treyarch reinstated Specialist Torque after a few bug fixes, and it was announced that the 7 maps were removed from the rotation. That includes Slum, Summit, Contraband for Hardpoint, Firing Range and Seaside for Search and Destroy, and Jungle and Payload for Control. That's a lot of maps removed from the pool. What are your thoughts around the limited map pool versus the variety of what comes in a competitive play?
I think the limited map pool helps in a lot of ways when it comes to broadcasting, right? Because your observers only have to remember a certain amount of things, right? And certain angles, they only have to be familiar with a smaller map pool. And to me, I think from a production standpoint, that helps. It can also help, but from a viewership standpoint, and
less to figure out.
Yeah, a lot less for people to understand. I think we're in some cases we're down to like 5 or even 2 in a map pool versus having upwards of 7. So it's good. I think it's beneficial. I understand the argument against it, which is, well, then teams don't have to practice on this other stuff, and there's less likely. I mean, we've seen the CS:GO scene, right, where they've literally like, okay, SK is just amazing on train or whatever it may be, right, and nobody's ever going to dethrone them because it's you have to always play them on train.
So let's focus our efforts elsewhere,
right? And so it can get a little boring, especially with Overwatch. But I understand why they why they're limiting it. And I think the benefits outweigh the negatives, especially if you already have a sizable pool.
Yeah, and we've seen similar things. You mentioned Overwatch, and it's worth talking about because it's not just about the maps themselves, also about the different game modes. And Blizzard spends a bunch of time producing content that are played before, you know, on every Overwatch League broadcast, every World Cup broadcast, to explain not just the map, but also explaining how the different modes work. And there is a far bigger difference between the game modes in Call of Duty than there are in Overwatch. Overwatch right. are kind of pieces that all fit together in different ways versus where these are very, very different game modes taken from very, very different fandoms in a lot of ways. And it does add to the complication of understanding as a viewer what is going on.
Yeah, and I think it's smart to play that out as if you're Treyarch, if you're Activision. Like you've got to understand like your audience. If you want to grow that audience, they need to be able to understand what's going on in the game and be able to watch it. I always mention that the bar test, if it's on a screen and there's nothing, like you can't hear it, but you can watch it, do you understand what's going on? And if in the course of your time at the bar, you'd never see the same map ever. Like it becomes a little more difficult.
There's that extra layer of like, okay, wait, what map is this? And wait, what game mode is associated with that map? And right. it's a little bit harder, in my opinion, in Call of Duty, just because the maps visually look the same versus the very, very big differences you tend to see in Overwatch maps.
Yep.
So some big news this week, the H1Z1 Pro League is going to be closing down nearly 7 months after its launch because of inconsistent payment issues. Despite just starting in April, the league failed to gain solid footing and had several problems fulfilling its stipend obligation to participating teams. Each of the 15 teams were supposed to receive a $400,000 per split stipend, but the league failed to pay those stipends per some ESPN sources. A letter has been sent to the league's teams organizations providing notice that the second split has been suspended indefinitely and that a second league season will not be renewed or scheduled at this time, according to Twin Galaxies co-chairman Jace Hall. As a result, teams have been immediately released from their league-specific obligations. Is this the end of H1Z1 Esports? Because this was a pretty big swing by them, and now here we are, and we're a split in, and poof, done.
Yeah, I hope it is not the death of H1Z1 as an esport. It sure does look like it. I say hopes because I know some people who are working there to support that as an esports and to support that endeavor. And you never want to see an esport technically fail. However, H1Z1 is maybe fourth or fifth choice now down the pecking order when it comes to this kind of battle royale mode. Like, there are new games that are coming out or games that are coming out with new modes that are more popular than H1Z1. H1Z1 was cannibalized first by like PUBG. Then you had Fortnite just kind of killing everybody. And even then, if you don't want to play PUBG or Fortnite, then you're playing Call of Duty, right? So there's nothing even there. And I would be surprised if even surpassing the Arma mod in some ways. It's tough. And I think that genre is with the amount of players, the teams and the computers and everything you need to run it. Like that's a tough one to dial in or keep costs low because so much is needed. Right. And which we've talked about how E-League ran it. I think that might be a good way of going about it. And maybe they need to restructure. I don't know, but this is pretty much putting a nail in it.
Yeah, and there doesn't seem to be much reason to restructure. The other point of this that is interesting to talk about is that they had an exclusive deal with Facebook in order to broadcast these matches, which is never a good place to be when you're trying to grow an audience. I think the peak numbers that I saw for this were around 7K, which is horrible when you're talking about the amount of outlay here of $400,000 per split per team.
Yeah, yeah.
You need a lot stronger viewership numbers. And I don't know that Facebook as a platform is capable of bringing the numbers you need to support something like this. I don't know what was involved financially for Facebook to get this exclusively, but clearly not enough for them to keep the lights on past the first split.
Yeah, they weren't even at historically, they've always been at like TwitchCon. Like last year at TwitchCon, yep. they had a huge presence, and this year they were just crickets. So we should have seen this coming. They just kind of dropped off. And it's largely because they have gone over to FB.gg.
Yep. I almost forgot about that.
Right, right. And you say 7K is what they get. I'm wondering how big that is for Facebook in general, because I don't know Facebook's numbers.
That's because I don't watch anything on Facebook.
Right. So 7K could be like the best thing on Facebook. I don't know. But either way, it's still not enough to bring in advertising dollars to offset. You need to make more than $400,000 a split. And if you're not able to get any kind of advertisers because they see like nobody's really watching or you're 7K, It's totally understandable. I don't want to see this drop. Like, I mean, I still think there's something out there for H1Z1. Maybe they, instead of trying to create a league, maybe they try and support the scene in some way, shape, or form. Kind of like Valve does for Dota and backing tournament and whatever. I think maybe that's a better way of going about it.
We used to talk about this all the time, and we haven't talked about this in many years, but like, this is definitely a case of walk before you run. Like, just don't think because you are in the Battle Royale world that you can just come out and be like, well, you know, we'll take advantage of Fortnite. You talk about the financial outlay here. So the Facebook deal seems problematic if you're trying to grow an audience. That is a pretty hefty stipend for a game in general that has not proven itself to be a popular esport. They also went overboard with the announcement of the league. They did the thing at Caesars Entertainment Studios in Las Vegas.
Right.
They had actors and actresses involved. They had Michelle Rodriguez from the Fast and the Furious franchise. It was hosted by the host of American Ninja Warrior. Like, spending a lot of unnecessary money that wasn't going to bring an audience in. People who want to watch this type of esport are going to watch it because they enjoy the game and they enjoy the broadcast, not because you have some celebrity talent that is involved, right? Like, we need to stop thinking that there's this magical, you know, unengaged audience out there that if we just get it in front of them, they're going to be like, oh my God, and they're going to come in droves to Facebook and watch your game. Like, you need to invest where it matters. If you can't land the core esports audience,
right,
that is going to be what sustains you. Take a lesson from the Overwatch League. Like, spend time engaging that core audience that's going to watch every week and turn them into whales, than trying to say, oh, we're going to get all these casual, non-existent esports fans that care about Michelle Rodriguez and are going to come in and watch the game. Like, it sounds silly, but it is. Like, that is not the way to go.
Yeah, and I think it's not for trying. They've got a strong team behind it. I know Miranda, who is actually the director of esports for Twin Galaxies.
Make sure to send her this episode.
I think I've known Miranda for probably, I don't know, 8 years, and she's solid, right? And I know, I mean, she was doing this stuff at Daybreak Games, she was doing this stuff at Blizzard, Cryptozoic, like, she's got, she knows what she's doing, so it wasn't for lack of trying. I just think that, as we've mentioned before, this Battle Royale mode is really hard to play out competitively, really hard to get a narrative. You have to find a way to change it up in some ways. And I just don't know if, as you mentioned, it's not even walk before you run. I mean, they were already running. They stopped and fell down, and they decided, hey, let's just sprint now. And
I have a dislocated knee.
Yeah, and it's H1Z1 stumbled. And really, if you to make a league that is basically identical to what your competitor was doing. So PUBG, they actually licensed stuff from PlayerUnknown. That's how they got their Battle Royale mode.
Right.
They licensed it, the IP, from Brendan Greene while he was making PUBG. So then PUBG comes out and just destroys them, and it makes perfect sense, right? So now you're trying to support a league that is based off of the IP that everybody else is already using and has already leased in some way.
That has in a lot of ways some bigger backing because you have Tencent involved. The other thing that came out of this, which is problematic, is that they were actually working with a lot of the big names in esports, right? This wasn't just like this wasn't like the HTC where you haven't heard of anybody. Cloud9, TSM, CounterLogic, Vitality, Rogue, etc. But the problem is these organizations lost money because they continue to pay their players as if they were going to get this stipend, and now they're not getting it. So now you've burned some of the big organizations within esports, which means you probably need to do right by those organizations to have any shot of them wanting to continue to be involved. I don't see how this comes back in any way other than like some community-led type organization tournament, similar to what we've seen that started the Fortnite scene. I think you need to go back to that and be okay with it. And like you said, build up a organization within Daybreak that is going through and supporting these community-led tournaments, putting prize pools out there, providing some sort of structure.
And I wonder, so WB actually ran the H1Z1 tournament. They aired a tournament, and it did pretty well from a number standpoint.
And you loved it so much.
I absolutely hated it, but it did well, despite my joy of it.
Super salty.
I was the worst. But I wonder if that kind of led them to believe, like, hey, this is something that the people want. We're going to get more deals from WB in the future. And there just wasn't, right? And maybe that was one of the things they thought would support. It was like some kind of TV deal, WB come back around. Maybe things just didn't work out. Maybe they saw the popularity drop and they pulled from it. I don't know, but it really, to create a league and say we're going to fund it with this much money during these splits and to not have any kind of solid plan. Now, I know what you're saying, that you need to back up those teams that signed on to do it, but like those teams that signed on to do it, they had to have seen the writing on the wall if these things didn't come through. And they can't come to any surprises.
Yeah, but I don't know that you like it. I guess it really boils down to how secure did you think those stipends are, and maybe they sold them on them being a much more secure, like, that money's already in the bag, you know, we'll stick it over here in a bucket and it's yours. So I think it was more about that than the success of the league. We have seen these organizations experimenting games that you and I go, what? Because there's money currently right in it, even if they don't see a long-term future for that game. You're placing a bunch of small bets, and you placed a bet on H1Z1. I think the general rule of thumb going forward for all people wanting to get involved in a particular professional esport league is if Facebook or Twitter are the only broadcast partners and they're exclusive broadcast partners, run.
It's true. Yeah, I think you have to. I think if somebody signed on to that, you're not going to get you mentioned that these teams are jumping in to kind of experiment in that space or to get notoriety, but those teams, they grow through eyeballs seeing their logo, seeing the team's sponsors on there as well. Like, they grow through people buying gear and whatever. And if those people aren't actually watching it and aren't attending and aren't viewing, it's not really helping them in the long run.
Nope. Look at Rocket League. I mean, we'll point back to Rocket League as a successful model for building up not a top tier esport in the grand scheme of things. And they had a massive audience at the RLCS finals. They were super hype. Viewership numbers were amazing because they didn't try to get ahead of themselves. They didn't sign any crazy exclusive deals that locked them into a platform that
right.
You're not going to elevate the platform. Facebook and Twitter are running around and gobbling up the remainder of the games that are left. I'm sorry, but it's 100% true. If that is your only broadcast partner, get out. Just run away.
Yeah, and it could have been where Vainglory was about a year or two ago, but now we've seen what they've done. But anyways. All right, so according to a report by GamesIndustry.biz, Tencent Holdings, which is Riot Games' parent company, as well, it's pretty much an investor in just about every game out there. They've seen a decline in PC-related game revenue, as we mentioned earlier in the show, and that's over the course of this year. So if you look across the board this week, I don't know if you've paid any attention, but EA's down, NetEase is down. Blizzard actually hit a 52-week low twice. Twice they did that this week, I think Thursday and on Friday. Everybody is really struggling. So, I mean, first off, what's behind Tencent's decline? And do you think this is having an impact industry-wide?
So to answer the second question first, like I think there is an industry-wide downturn for a few reasons. One is we were operating at some pretty high heights in general, right?
Yeah.
I have not looked at like the 2 or 3 year historical highs, but in general, Tencent especially and Blizzard have been riding pretty high. For those of us that have had stock in those companies, you've been feeling pretty good about your stock for a fair amount of time. The PC industry has always been up or down. There have been many times in the last 2 or 3 years where experts have come in and proclaimed that, like, this is the decline of the PC industry. PCs are shipping less frequently. A lot of big companies in general PCs, not talking about just gaming PCs, but if you look at your HPs, your Dells, etc., there has been a overall decline in shipments where it was mobile, like tablets, phones, things of that nature have been going up and up. We have seen a push from Tencent over the years to try to move into mobile gaming across all their properties. We've talked about this ad nauseum with Riot, the Blizzard story earlier in the show. I think Tencent's companies and the gaming companies in general have not moved to mobile in a meaningful enough way to start to gather dollars. When you see these, they have to be better at these ephemeral hits. So let's talk about the mobile gaming market really quick. I know I have a couple of minutes on this, and we should have made this a second anchor topic. I think one is when you talk about your Candy Crushes, your Draw Togethers, mm-hmm. all these things that have happened over the years that we make fun of in 2 years retrospective. That is the mobile gaming market in general. And these companies have not pivoted to that model across their games quickly enough. We've seen them buy King, for example, we talked about last week with Candy Crush. But there has to be a model beyond go and snatch up that company in hopes that they will produce a second hit, because their likelihood of producing a second hit is pretty small. We've seen Supercell do it, and that's about it. Like, Zynga famously did it on Facebook for years and then failed miserably when the move to mobile.
Yeah, well, Zynga pretty much reproduced everybody's famous hit. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's the big thing behind it, is that Tencent has, and the game and the industry as a whole, your big players, your EAs, your NetEase, your Blizzards, have not found that model. And I think Diablo Immortal is going to be an interesting experiment for Blizzard, because it's not about making this game that is a hit that lasts for years and years on mobile. It's about, can I get the money while I can and get out and find the next thing that'll get people interested without having to go and buy, you know, your Trivia HQs, your Draw Togethers, your right. Candy Crushes.
Well, I mean, if you look at Diablo, it makes sense from that standpoint. When you talk about this 2-year cycle, you look at Diablo, and from a release cycle standpoint, games like that tend to only last for a year or two. But when you get into things like MMOs, you want them lasting obviously more than that. If you're trying to drive something as an esport, then you want to make it sure it lasts more than 2 years. But in this case, Diablo's technically the right franchise for them to try and jump into mobile first with. Mm-hmm. And it just happened to be that they are also some of the loudest and whiniest of people. Now, the other thing that's really affecting Tencent... Yeah, well, whatever. Tencent's also run into the fact that the Chinese government has been coming down pretty hard on gaming as a whole across the country.
And treating Tencent, it like a true medical addiction.
Right, and Tencent is just right at the forefront of that and is taking the brunt of it. So before anything went on at BlizzCon, I mean, they were already on the decline. It was like they've been down, I don't know, considerable amount over the course of the year, maybe even like we're talking double digits, but like 30%+ drop.
Yep.
And they even have in their earnings call, they kind of dodged that whole topic around China's not releasing essentially the ability for – they control the number of games you can actually release in a year.
Yeah. The government they basically does. Haven't opened up slots for them to release more.
Right. Even though Tencent has 15 games in the hopper, they can't release them yet because they're waiting on the government to approve stuff, which is why they're playing nice around police record stuff and times and all these different things, because like, they want to be able to get them out there. And not, but even when you start restricting people, you're not going to make any more money off of that because it's even tougher. So you have to release more games. And so they're put in a tight spot. And I agree that it has an industry-wide effect, especially when it comes to the stock market, because when they see Blizzard tank, you can almost watch EA and Blizzard do the exact same thing on the exact same days, even though they're completely different. Same with NetEase. Same with Take-Two Interactive.
They're big enough companies that people in the market react to the overall market conditions for games often and not necessarily what that particular company has done.
Right.
And Tencent really is kind of like the NASDAQ index of gaming, because they own so many pieces of many gaming franchises, but gaming in general goes down. Likely Tencent is involved or orthogonally involved, and therefore they take a dump. So
yeah, and if you look at how Tencent has gone from this year in terms of revenue and in PC side, again, I think that we've been at the top of that kind of curve for a long time. It was about to turn downward at any given moment. I'm surprised it's about 8 months past due, really.
Riot's had a rough year. Blizzard's had a rough year. Tencent has major holdings in both those companies. That alone would be enough to drag it down. Refresh Entertainment have finally sold off Heroic Gaming, the second of three esports organizations to be sold by the company, Godsend being the other one. Leave the organization finally compliant with the WESA conflict of interest rules over a year after they were announced. Which is more surprising to you, that it took them this long to become compliant, or that anyone bothered to become compliant in the first place?
I think, Refresh just got that round of funding, I think like last week, week before last. Mm-hmm. They just got a bunch of money thrown in. They are now with Astralis, they're jumping into League of Legends. So this is, Heroic has not been a huge performer for them. They've had some ups, they've had mostly downs. They've kind of become this kind of a hodgepodge group of people competitively that they've kind of got contracts tied to. You could always tell that Refresh was never going to back them. And even when they found out, like last week, I was like, oh, here comes the money for Astralis. It's not Heroic. When is Heroic getting booted? And it was literally a week later, they get canned. I don't think it's so much the WESA thing as it is the fact that they weren't making money and they're putting more of their effort actually away from CSGO. But to find the right buyer, to get someone to offload Haruk to, I mean, obviously it has to be on the table. Wessa has given ample time. They gave, what, like 2 years, I think, when we first started the story.
Like we were wondering whether or not the game was even going to still be around by the time right. that everybody got compliant.
And Haruk isn't really in a bunch of different games, and it's the less known between the two. We knew it was coming.
And they were always going to keep Astralis. The strength of that brand compared to Godsent and Haruk, they were always going to keep
Astralis. You never saw Audi on Godsent's shirts whatsoever.
What? Why not?
Well, because they were too busy running just a temporary thing on Astralis. All right, so moving on, SKT is already thinking about a future without Faker. The organization opened up official negotiations with Kingzone for Star Jungler and former SKT1 player Peanut. There was much talk about Peanut being held back by Faker's presence on the team, so now with Faker out of the way, is this Peanut's shot to prove that he can be the centerpiece of SKT?
Well, I think he'll be the centerpiece of SKT. I don't know whether it's going to be a successful run at being the centerpiece of SKT.
This is true.
I mean, we talked a lot during Worlds that year that Peanut and Faker on the same team was never going to work. Peanut had come from Rocks Tigers. He'd largely been used to the entire game flowing through him, and that was never going to happen on SKT. No. They were never going to not have the game be led by Faker. He was too much of a powerhouse. So now, with Faker potentially not being on SKT anymore, it's looking fairly likely he's a free agent as of today. I think this is their best shot at a replacement. I think they probably saw a lot of good things in Peanut, but knew that Peanut was never going to stick with that team until Faker's contract was up, given the quality of play that they had seen from him and that he was probably capable of outside of playing second fiddle to Faker. Peanut has not necessarily had the best of time since leaving SKT.
Yeah.
But then again, SKT hasn't had the best of times since that Worlds that they lost, right? Like, so it has been downhill for them. They were not even at Worlds this year for the first year in a very, very long time. That is, you know, this is a good potential way to rebuild. I think it's a good move for both Peanut and SKT. Now, do I think he's going to be the next Faker? Do I think that SKT is back in Worlds purely on the back of signing Peanut? Definitely not, but it certainly is a way for them to say, we are ready to move on, and Peanut is potentially that way for us to move on.
Yeah, especially if they're able to take the money that they were investing in Faker, keeping what it costs to keep Faker on the roster, they could probably pick up Peanut. They could probably pick up someone who works complementary to Peanut and round out a pretty solid team. I don't know if that's the case. As you mentioned, they did not have a good year. And you had a better year when you had Peanut on board. So it's worth a shot. He essentially knows the organization in some way.
Yeah, but yeah. They know what to expect with him. That's the most important thing. They clearly saw enough good when he was with the organization to bring him on. Now, so far, negotiations have not been successful, but they have not cut off saying that this is not a case. So this is not a foregone conclusion by any stretch of the imagination. And this will be probably, I don't say the first time, but this is probably the most prominent version of free agency that we've seen play out in League of Legends, where a major star is on the block. And this is kind of like the LeBron James effect, right? Knowing where Faker goes will have a lot of impact on moves that happen after Faker lands. And that's a pretty cool thing to see play out in League of Legends, because I don't think we've had a player of this caliber be available as a true free agent.
Oh, no. I mean, this is the untouchable player, right? The fact that, like,
2 years ago, you would have never guessed that they would ever let him go.
Right, right. And now he's out there. Do you have a guess of where he might end up? Do you think anybody will pull a trigger to get him?
I think Gen G makes a play for him. Gen G has lost a few players from their roster. I think they are potentially clearing space to build a team around Faker, and I think that is a smart thing to do, because they also had a disappointing Worlds this year. And obviously not nearly as disappointing as not making it at all like SKT, but I think Gen G make a move for him.
Yeah, and they are also flush with cash right now, too. So with all the new investments, maybe that's part of how they're able
Faker
to pull it.
Check out our shiny new trading facilities.
There you go.
I like it. Artifact's NDA lifted this weekend, and news of more punishing microtransactions are starting to roll in. We already knew that the game would lack an in-game currency, but now we have more details on how you can earn those packs. And spoiler alert, it means you're going to spend more money. Card packs can be earned only via expert mode unless you buy them, which, unsurprisingly, requires tickets at a cost of $1 a pop to play.
Jeez.
Are Valve shooting themselves in the foot with this overly complicated and incredibly expensive monetization model?
I think so. I think... There have been numerous complaints, especially around the starting heroes that you get. They're also included in packs. So think about this.
You're getting like duplicates already.
Yeah, you're getting duplicates of cards that you were given to start with. And the only way for you to offload them is to sell them in the Valve Steam store. And you can't do that because everybody has them. And you could only play one in your deck. So there's absolutely 0 point and zero market to get rid of them. But when you buy packs, they're included. So you're essentially getting completely dead cards. And there's no real way of really making anything off this. I was watching so I haven't had a ton of time to play this weekend, largely because of the move, but I was watching Kriparian last night as I was building IKEA furniture, because that's what you do. So I was watching him, and he was doing drafts, and he was like, yeah, I'm just doing rare drafts, because basically when you go through, you get to keep the cards, but you're keeping the – he was keeping rare cards so he could just sell them later. Like, he was on purpose kind of bombing – like his run in a lot of ways.
Because he just wanted the cards.
Right, because he wanted the cards. And when you start doing that, you start screwing with that as a mode where nobody takes it seriously because they're just rare drafting.
Yeah.
So you want to get the most of your money. So these people who can't actually earn money through gameplay like you can in, like, say, doing a 12-run in arenas in Hearthstone is way more beneficial. And you're guaranteed to essentially get a card pack at the end. So it offsets. I mean, you have to lose less than – you have to win less than three games to maybe incur a loss of what you put into
right.
it. And I just think
– there's something fundamentally broken here. This feels like what it is, which is a game designed by somebody who largely has experience in, like, physical trading card games. It's built like a physical trading card game, does not respect the differences of a digital card medium, and I think this is either going to fundamentally break Artifact in the beginning and keep it from being a big game,
right.
or we're going to see an Artifact 2.0 within the first, like, 6 to 12 months of the game's existence to try to make up for all these really poor design choices.
Yeah, and on top of it, you have an initial buy-in of $20, too. It's like $19.99, and each card pack is $2 a piece at past that, which is pretty standard. That's about what Hearthstone, yeah.
But the lack of ability to earn them any other way, card-wise or pack-wise, without spending money is the part that really gets to me.
Yeah, I think if this does fall flat, it will be largely because of this business model, and because the market is just not that way. It's an antiquated way of doing digital card games in a lot of ways.
And it's a much more complicated game than Hearthstone, that you will find a harder time to find all the cards to be able to play it all the different ways that you can play it because it is so much more expensive to experiment.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's going to hurt because especially when you have people like screwing with game modes because you're forcing people into playing games and a type of game that they don't want to, and they may not be ready for, but they have to do it in terms of get stuff. And at that point in time, you don't have fun playing the game. So... All right, last up here, we have Hi-Rez Expo is taking place this weekend. It should be wrapping up later today. It's now partnered with DreamHack. If you did not know, you may have heard DreamHack was going on, but Hi-Rez Expo is also in that same exact space. This means that a whole new slew of announcements, including crossplay for their games, minus PlayStation, of course, a new Magic hero in Paladins, King Arthur and Merlin coming to Smite, and more. So tons of stuff. We love Hi-Rez Expo. It's early Christmas this year, basically. What are your favorite announcements from the weekend?
Well, to be clear, this is the first time in maybe 3 years that you and I, or one or both of us, have not been at Hi-Rez Expo.
This is true.
It's like crazy. It also has to do with the fact that it's much earlier this year than it has been in the past. It's usually the first weekend after New Year's, and we were just out of energy after BlizzCon. There's just no way this was happening. But yeah. So I'm excited about a few things. One, crossplay is great. Even if it's not coming to PS4, their crossplay includes one key thing that all crossplays need to have in the future. I'm looking at you, Blizzard, is the ability to have your progress in the game go across the platforms. Being able to have a skin on the Switch and be able to use that skin on the PC. One of my biggest frustrations with crossplay, or the lack thereof, is this ability to not be able to share things across there. So I'm forced to still, even though I have the ability to play it on multiple platforms, I'm forced to play it on that one platform because that's where I have all my progression. Two, this is a very interesting turn for Smite to go down this path with King Arthur and Merlin, because this is not necessarily gods anymore, right? They've largely stuck to pantheons, and those pantheons contain actual gods from lore of particular cultures. And King Arthur and Merlin are stretching that definition of gods from a lore a little bit too far. I'm sure there's going to be some people upset about this. As somebody who loves the King Arthur universe, I don't know if you remember that crazy cartoon from back in the day, Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table, which is like this crazy, like, mask meets King Arthur kind of situation. I think it's awesome. So I'm looking forward to that.
Do they have Funko Pops? If they did, they'd be in this room.
That's a dumb question. Just look around you. Do you see them? Nope. Then they don't exist. And I think on the Paladin side, we are getting a new hero, or a new champion, I should say. And that champion has a very interesting mechanic in that it dual wields magic of frost and fire. And I love that Paladins continues to, like, stretch the definition of what a champion can be. And it's not just a traditional first-person shooter. Everybody's got a gun. We saw this with Moji, who was announced last year, which has a crazy, like, two-headed thing that it rides and spits different magic at it. So the ability to stretch the definition of FPS is something I've always loved around Paladins in particular. And so I think it's great. I think there's a lot of cool stuff to expect here. The one thing I did not see, though, High-Res Expo is still not over, is did they announce some other crazy game to replace the crazy game they announced last year that didn't release, et cetera, bots and the Hand of Gods clone and Hand of the Gods. Every year there's a new announcement. And I think largely we're not seeing that because of this new studio split. And that they are no longer High-Res as a singular entity. There's all these individual studios, and we have not seen that experiment.
Oh, that's right. This is the first year for that.
Yeah, it is.
That makes a lot of sense that we don't have anything totally out of whack. Yep. It's kind of all in line.
Yep. And they also are bringing cross-platform to Realm Royale, which desperately needs it because that game's number. Talk about numbers that are tanking.
Oh, yeah.
We're one step away from Realm Royale signing an exclusive deal with Facebook and starting up an esports league.
They're going to do cross-platform with H1Z1 just to kind of bump some numbers.
Yes, which it's telling that the ready-made WESA league that they've been able to pull off with, like, Paladins, they've not attempted in Realm Royale, and there's probably for a reason.
Yeah, I don't think it's got much life on it.
No, it definitely does not. I feel maybe that's why they split out that extra studio so that studio could declare bankruptcy while still not impacting overall High-Res.
I'm telling you, it's probably what it was. I mean, I think financially and from a business sense, High-Res has really good business sense. And I think that they are no strangers to dumping games like we talk about. We joke about it. Like, they'll announce a game, it'll go, and they're like, within a year, pull the plug.
In public, and, you know, as much fun we make fun of them, that's something we wish Blizzard would do more of. So,
but they also know when to pull the plug on things. So, but in some ways, it makes it kind of like, do I really want to invest heavily into this game? Because it might go. But the funny thing is like, the things that do take off, like Paladins, was, again, already jumping out in beta. They're already doing an esports run in beta.
You could play that game in alpha, and there was an invitational, but it was still in freaking alpha. So, like, they do get it right.
Yeah. Well, it was scary, but they –
We definitely white-knuckle it as High-Res fans. Like, you never know. But, you know, we'll see. A programming note, we talked about this last week, but I want to reiterate this week. There will be no show this Thursday. Everybody can enjoy their holiday. It'll be esports free. Seven will be building IKEA furniture. I'll be building the studio, so neither of us will have an actual holiday. But for all of our listeners, like, we wish you a happy Thanksgiving if you celebrate here in the U.S. And if you're not, you're in Canada and you had it weeks ago and you don't know what the hell we're talking about.
Is this your closing statement?
That was my closing statement.
Damn Canada.
Damn Canada. You can catch us otherwise every Monday and Thursday on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Just head over to eleaguereport.com for all the ways to listen and subscribe. And while you're over there on iTunes, be sure to tell us what you think of the show by leaving a 5-star review. We got another one this week. I'm just loving people. Like, this whole spiel is working. They either feel really, really bad for us, or all those bots that we paid to start leaving us reviews are finally working out.
Yes, finally. Yeah, they're very expensive. They're one bot at a time.
It is the world's slowest Mechanical Turk is what is going on right now. It's horrible. You can follow us on E-League TV on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Or if you want to troll us more directly, you can do so over at Discord at discord.eleaguereport.com. If there's something Seven said incorrectly about Dota 2 this week, be sure to get on the train.
It happens.
It happens literally every week. And if that's not enough of esports content for you, be sure to check out E-League Daily for the day's top headlines, available as an Amazon Echo Flash briefing or in regular old podcast form. And don't forget to tune in this weekend for part two of the E-League Smash Ultimate E3 Invitational, which will be taking place at 11 p.m. Eastern and Pacific over on TBS.
So take those leftovers from Thanksgiving, just
fill up your belly, get a little turkey coma, watch a little Smash Ultimate.
There you go.
Preparing for the release. We're only a few weeks away.
This is real life.
It's real life. I'm super hyped. That's going to do it for this week. We'll be back on Monday with the post-Thanksgiving edition of The Eve.